You're listening to Peter Donegan. The following audio is a conversation between myself and Jane Powers, garden correspondent with the Irish Times, where we speak about the release of her first book, The Living Garden. It was originally recorded for The Sod Show, the garden radio programme I present with Brian Green on 103.2 Dublin City FM every Friday at 3 p.m. You can listen to this audio in its original format as it was aired on Friday the 1st of April via iTunes. Just search Sod Show. Or you can go to the blog, that's blog.donneganlandscaping.com. Scroll down to categories on your right hand side. And in there you will find podcast. Take care and enjoy. So it's an honour and a pleasure to welcome back to the Sod Show Jane Powers. Jane, how are you?
I'm great, Peter. Thank you very much.
That's good. That's good. Last time I was talking to you, we were talking about shamrocks. This time you have just published your first book. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I have published my first book. It's something I've wanted to do ever since I was a wee small girl. It's tremendously exciting.
Can I ask you, Jane, and going straight back into it, I mean, when the book first came out, part of me was kind of saying, oh, here we go, another gardening book. And I think I did make the point when I reviewed it on the blog that, you know, there are so many books out there. If you take even, for example, like treating lawns and looking after lawns, there are just miles and miles and miles of what seems to be a little bit the same old. I was pleasantly surprised when I picked up your own, in the sense that the one thing that stood out to me was that all of the photographs, correct me if I'm wrong, bar about six, are your own.
Yeah, well, every single one of them except for six are my photographs. That's me crawling around mainly my garden on my hands and knees, or standing on ladders, or crawling around other people's gardens. I really, really enjoy taking the pictures, but I must say it was a tremendous relief this spring to watch the snowdrops coming up and the daffodils coming out and the first butterfly appearing, and not having to run out with my camera to try and capture it all.
For those who don't and who aren't aware, who took the other six photographs?
The other six photographs were taken by my husband, Jonathan Hesham, who is an incredibly wonderful photographer, and he taught me everything I knew.
I read the thank you list in the back of your book, and I read it to Brian last week. I rang him over the telephone, and I said to him, waiting to hear this for a round of applause from Jane to Jonathan, and he said he'd nearly marry Jonathan himself. Was that fine a compliment?
I know, he's an excellent cook, amongst other things.
I suppose getting a non-gardener to look at a gardener's book, or a book for gardeners, the chapter or the part that I took as an example to point out to him was the one on slugs and snails, and you call it things that slither.
I call it things that slither in the night, slugs and snails. I suppose I find nature fascinating, absolutely fascinating, and I find gardening fascinating, and I want to try and interest people who, you know, who maybe want to know how to garden, but they haven't got a clue where to start. And sometimes when I'm trying to work out how to tell somebody about a certain thing like slugs and snails, or how to take cuttings or something, I imagine that I'm sitting next to them at a dinner table, or, you know, on the train, and that I have only, you know, a few minutes to engage them. And I try and think of the most interesting thing to tell them about the particular subject that I'm speaking about. So, you know, things like slugs and snails are, you know, they're fascinating. All slugs and snails are hermaphrodites. That means that they're both male and female. So they've got both bits of sexual tackle. You know, when they meet, you know, they both, how shall we say, do the business with each other. And so then both partners go off and lay eggs, which is fascinating. You know, because they are hermaphrodites, each slug has both male and female parts. So after they've, you know, had a lovely evening, they go off and they both lay eggs. So I just find things like that, you know, really exciting and interesting. Also, you know, another thing that's quite interesting about slugs and snails is that, you know, when people go out at night, they see these big, huge, enormous slugs that look like walruses. You know, those ones that are about 4 inches long. Mm. And they think, oh my God, you know, my garden's overrun with slugs. And so they go out and they, you know, start shooting them or cutting them up or putting down slug pellets and that sort of thing. But in fact, those huge, big black slugs, their Latin name, in case you want the Latin name, is Arion ater. They actually are not that damaging. They mainly eat rotting material, those particularly big ones. They're called detritivores, which means they eat detritus. So, in fact, the ones that are eating your lettuces are much smaller and less conspicuous. But, you know, these big blobby lads are the ones that everybody goes out and kills. And I just think that that's kind of unfortunate. Mm. And it's things like that that I want to share with people. I think that the garden is just full of amazing and interesting facts. And the more you know about it, the more exciting it is, and the more, you know, you're inclined to try and make it a better place for yourself and for nature and all the other creatures that are living there. And I suppose another thing is that I'm always learning, and gardeners are always learning. There's no prescription for doing any one particular job in the garden. I suppose that the best kind of gardener is a thinking gardener, and that's what I would like people to do, is to learn how to think rather than to learn how to, say, take cuttings in the textbook manner, although the textbook manner probably is a very good way. But I want them to work out why they're doing it in such and such a way, and then maybe make it better. I want people to think.
I was doing a series of talks with Fingal County Council for 4 primary schools in their libraries. The one thing I realised very, very quickly is that my knowledge of botanical Latin really was a pointless ability, one might call it. Did you find when you were writing this book that you had to kind of pause and stop and take a breath before you wrote down these elongated, different languaged words?
The use of botanical Latin, it's a fraught area, because I'm really against people throwing around Latin names just so that they seem more intelligent than other people. But in certain cases, it is essential to use the Latin name, because it describes exactly what a particular plant is. So if you're...
Well, the example the real good example you gave me the last time was the Trifolium dubium.
That's right, the shamrock. If you want to know what the Latin name for shamrock is, there is actually no one particular species. There are, in fact, 5 species. And so that's actually a very good case in point. And in that case, the Latin is essential to distinguish one from another. But it's not essential if somebody's talking about dandelions. You know, you don't say, I've got Taraxacum officinale in my garden, you know, because then that person should really be hit with a trowel, you know, for being pretentious. There's 2 kind of different kinds of gardening language. I mean, there are all the Latin words, which they're an international language for gardeners. So I can talk to a French gardener, or I can talk to an Italian gardener, because we have the same names for plants, and that's really great. There are words like chitting, chittiting, which is sprouting your potatoes. And it does just mean sprouting, but it specifically means potatoes. And I think that's kind of nice. And then you have other old words, like, you know, the little sort of piece of round wood that you use for sticking holes in the ground. That's called a dibber. And that's a nice old word. And a trug, you know, is this particular basket for carrying around bits and pieces in the garden. And I like these words, because they're old words. They describe a very old craft.
Quick one, Jane. How long does it take somebody to collate and put together a book like this?
It took me over 2 years, but I had been thinking about it for an awfully long time. A faster writer probably would have done it faster, but I'm not a fast writer. And also, it is a gardening book in that it'll tell you how to do an awful lot of practical things, and it's got, you know, plants for places. Like if you've got a dry garden, it'll tell you plants for your, you know, your dry garden and the dark bits in your dry garden. If you've got a damp garden, it'll tell you what to grow there. So it's practical. Mm-hmm. And it'll tell you things like how to make compost and how to sow seeds and how to prune and all sorts of things like that. But it's also, it's my view on life in the garden and how our gardens are part of a greater planet, and how the greater planet impacts on our gardens, and how what we do in our garden can impact on the planet, and how we're all, you know, tied together. So it took me a long time to try and formulate a way of saying all these things that would be understandable and not seem too pretentious.
Were there points in times during the journey of writing this book, which I'm sure it was over a 24-month period approximate, that you almost felt like banging your head off the wall, pulling your hair out, pulling somebody else's hair out, you might say, as well?
Most days were like that, yes. Also, because I write my weekly column in the Irish Times, it meant that I'd never get a good long bash at doing the book. There was one period where, over Christmas, where I had about 4 weeks off my column. I'd done some in advance, and then I had a break. So I had actually a break of something like 4 weeks at one go, and that was actually blissful, because I just would get up in the morning and just go and start writing the book and write it all day. And then the next day, do the same again, and I didn't actually have to think about producing a column every week, which I love doing. I absolutely love doing the column, but it means that your brain always has to switch into column mode. For me, it's 2 days a week.
What's been the response on the book so far, Jane?
Everybody that I've spoken to seems to really like it. I've had some nice things in the press about it. It seems to fit in with the way that people are thinking at the moment, in that they want to live a more sort of meaningful life. You know, I hate to say get back to nature, but they want to find meaning in their life in a way through gardening and through a greater appreciation of nature and being at one with this wonderful, beautiful planet that we live on. Mm. And I think that it's just hit a lovely chord for a lot of people. I mean, I'm crazy about wildlife. I love wildlife. I mean, if I lived in some other country where we had maybe snakes and poisonous spiders and things like that, I probably would be slightly less wild about wildlife. But because, you know, anything that comes into my garden is going to be, you know, fairly attractive, you know, like the butterflies and the bees and all that sort of stuff, and the, you know, the birds. And it's just, I think that we are all creatures on this one planet. And there's no doubt about it, we are the creatures in charge, you know, but I think that it takes very little for us to actually make a better place for the other creatures on the planet. And it's easy to do in your back garden, to start in your back garden.
Can I ask you, you've been writing the Irish Times column since 1997.
Yes.
And I think it's probably fair to say that I've seen very little of Jane Powers outside of the Irish Times weekend magazine, in the context that you haven't really been a TV radio personality. Do you think, or are you feeling a little bit all famous now? Not only that you're on the Sod Show, of course, but or is that a daunting thing, or is that something that you're concerned about or worrying you?
I'm a writer. I'm so much a writer, you know, and I sit in a room with my notes and my books and my computer, and I love writing. Like, it's hard. It's really, really hard. But I love writing because it means that I have the time to think about what I want to say, and then I can say it in the best succinct way and hopefully make it interesting and possibly a little bit entertaining. So I have never sought to be on the radio or television. I mean, you know, I've had the odd little spot here and there, but it's not something that I'm terribly comfortable with. But I think that anybody who's kind of in, especially now with new media, you can't just be a writer anymore. So then you have to come on to things like sodcasts and sod shows and speak to people and think really fast. So I find it very difficult, yes.
One thing I got to give you credit for, I mean, I've some great books in my arsenal, in my library. The problem I would have with a lot of them as I have reviewed them is that all of the references to the back are all UK-based. In your own, I noticed that you've got your fair spoils of UK and Ireland. Was that for a particular reason, or do you find that that's something a little bit unusual, Jane? I personally find it a little bit different.
The book is published by a British publisher, Francis Lincoln, whom I have to say are my dream publisher. They are the best publisher of garden books that I know of. They're based in London. They're an independent house, and they publish a couple hundred books a year. So they have a readership which is in the UK and in the United States and in Ireland. So that's why my resources cover Ireland and England. They don't really cover the United States, but the book is for sale there as well.
Okay. Briefly, if people want to get an autograph from Jane Powers, the superstar now, you have a couple of book signings en route.
There'll be a very nervous Jane Powers signing books at Newbridge Silverware in Newbridge, County Kildare. I'll be there at 3 p.m. on April 1st, April Fool's Day. And then I'm going to be in Brown Thomas at 2 p.m. on April the 16th. That's Brown Thomas in Grafton Street in Dublin. And then I'm also, I don't have an actual date for this, but the West Cork Garden Trail, at the launch of the West Cork Garden Trail in the Glebe Gardens in Baltimore in June. I think it's June 11th or 12th. I'm not sure. I will have the exact date of that up on my blog.
Which is onebeanroad.wordpress.com. But I have to say, well done. Congratulations. And it was an honour and a pleasure to speak to you once again.
Thank you very much.
The Sod Show. It'll grow on you. Join gardener Peter Donegan and not-so-green fingers Brian Green on Dublin City FM. Fridays, 3 p.m. The Sod Show. It'll grow on you. The Sod Show, Friday, 3 p.m., Dublin City FM.